Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today is the founder of Jihad Watch and also a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He has written 26 books. He is a fearless truth teller. He loves this country and he is trying to fight for us on the front lines. He has a new book out we're going to discuss. Thank you for joining me, Robert Spencer.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've been following you for a very long time. You've done such important work for our country and for the world, quite honestly. And you have turned your attention from really warning us about everything with jihad and the Middle East and what's been going on in our country. But you have turned your attention to the United States and what is happening here, a seemingly internally and externally controlled demolition of America through a hopeful, I guess, for these people, civil war. You have a new book out, The Sumter Gambit. I want to talk a little bit about what that is, what you see happening, and what we should be doing to stop this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Excuse me. The Sumter Gambit is it's about how the left is trying to start a new civil war. And we see this all around us all the time. The main example of it, I think, was Joe Biden's ominous red and black speech from September 1st, 2022, when he said Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent a threat to the very life of the Republic. There's never been a president that said anything like that before. Right. This is a whole new thing in American politics. There have always been factions and parties in American politics for most of the life of the Republic. There's been the two-party system. But never before has the president of the United States said that his principal opponent and half of the electorate, essentially, are outside the bounds of what's acceptable in American politics. That's not something that people in a republic actually do. That's right. What authoritarian regimes do.
Right. Yeah. And it was also the whole setup of it, how they set it up, it with like red, and it looks so demonic to me. And on top of that, we had already been through the assault since January 6th, honestly, before, of the intelligence agencies, DHS, FBI, calling half this country domestic terrorists, calling something an insurrection that was not. So it has been a setup, I feel, all along. I mean, I think it goes back way before that to Black Lives Matter and a lot of things that had happened earlier. But what we've seen with the intelligence agencies is also something that it's been there, but it hasn't been in our faces like it is now. It's very dangerous and very scary, I think, to most of America.
Yeah, you know, I think even today, most Americans assume that the FBI is a nonpartisan law enforcement agency, right, when actually it's a weaponized arm of the Democrat Party that is pursuing a fiercely partisan agenda and working toward nothing less than criminalizing half of the electorate. And right. So, well, you know, they need to be shut down and many other agencies as well. But whether that will happen, that's another question.
Well, that's because in my estimation, the whole concept of left or right, Republican or Democrat, when it comes to D.C. at this day and age, is a total farce. We have a uniparty It appears. And what's scary is it appears to me that there's an oligarchy of billionaires and trillionaires that are aligned with this globalist movement that have usurped our nation, and that our government right now is certainly, it appears to me, not working for we the people or to better our country or to protect our country or for anything, but they are working for this class. And when I look into what you're talking about, it's this small group of elitist billionaire class that are funding these NGOs and funding this kind of color revolution model within the United States. And that leaves people to wonder who is running this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't know. We don't have a clear answer to that question. We right. certainly know it's not Biden. But who it is? Well, some people say Obama. Some people think people are running Obama also. Right. And I tend toward that view myself. But you're absolutely right. What we have is the beginnings of, and I hope that they'll never get farther than the beginnings, of what is no less than a fascist regime in the United States. Now, fascist is a word that's thrown around a lot, and the left likes to use it on us. But actually, they are the real fascists, because what distinguished fascism from communism was not that one was on the right and one was on the left, as most people assume. Communism took control of the means of production and the government owned everything, and you were a slave of the government. In fascist regimes, you were a slave of the government as well, but they didn't take over all the means of production. They simply coordinated with them and worked with the heads of the big corporations, right, and everybody was working in the same direction. That's what's happening now, as you pointed out. The Biden administration works with Twitter, or worked with Twitter before Elon Musk, who's really thrown a wrench into the works, but they worked with Twitter to silence dissidents, to get people deplatformed and banned who were saying things that they didn't like. They work with the other corporate, the big media outlets to silence people. That's how fascist regimes work. These are private corporations, and that's what people always say when we say, well, you know, we have to protect the freedom of speech and not let them ban everybody that they have, who enunciates a point of view they don't like. And they say, well, you see, they're private corporations. And that's how the fascist scheme is working, that they have this all-purpose excuse. But they are marching in lockstep with the government to institute an authoritarian regime in the United States.
Yeah, what's very scary is I've done a lot of work on this global public-private partnership, which has the front groups, in my opinion, of the UN and the World Economic Forum and the obviously the World Health Organization under that. We got the IMF, the World Bank. If you look at these people's websites and actually do the lifting and look into like global governance and what they're talking about with stakeholder capitalism and global public-private partnership, what it appears that they are saying, and they're having their big event next week in Davos to just rub it into the world's faces, is that they are doing exactly what you say. They are going with the corporations and the heads of the multinational corporations, which somehow are all basically owned by 10 companies. And then they're lining up with the banks to circumvent and basically skip our government, our constitution, our Bill of Rights, and come right to us with things like diversity, equity, inclusion, and CRT, and mind control and behavior modification through the banks and corporations that seem to be way more powerful than any elected official or selected official, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't have any accountability whatsoever as a result. And everybody is on the same team. So you can't find a single corporation that doesn't have the diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense. All of them have signed on to the same program. And so there's nowhere for patriots to turn. And ultimately, this could get very ugly because they could say that you can't have a bank account, right, if you're not on board with their agenda and their program. And this has already started, actually, in a certain sense. In 2018, MasterCard said they would not process any donations to my organization because of Islamophobia. And, you know, Islamophobia is a made-up word that it's just an excuse to demonize people who are opposed to jihad violence. But the left is on board with it. And then General Flynn, a few months back, Chase said, we're canceling your account. So once the other banks get on board, then everybody is going to have to toe the line or find alternative means to deal economically, which could be very difficult.
Right. And then there are the American groups, the NGOs that all have really nice sounding names like Southern Poverty Law Center and ACLU and Media Matters and, Human Rights Campaign. And then what's crazy is you go and you look and you do a little influence watch digging, and you're going to find that they are all funded by the same 5 or 6 billionaires or foundations or trusts. And people believe, or are, because the media is captured, people believe that their opinions and what they think are the majority. But people like you and Flynn, but a lot of other people, have been put on lists by these groups that have these names that sound like they're for good. And when you dig down a little, you're going to find it's Soros and it's the Gates Foundation and it's, Carnegie Endowment, or it's the Ford Foundation. It's all these billionaire oligarchs in America that are manipulating people into believing things that A, aren't true, creating a majority that doesn't exist, and then turning around and saying democracy is being threatened, majority, because of people like you or me or Flynn or any number of people on their ridiculous lists. And somehow they're getting away with this. And the legal system is not working in terms of protecting anyone from these fraudulent NGOs.
No, the legal system is on board with the same thing. You know, they're all in the same club, like George Carlin said 50 years ago. Big club, and we're not in it. And the judicial system is. And all the big tech corporations and all the corporations are. You know, you mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they put you on their list. They put me on their list for years, and there's no appeal. There's no discussion. There's no recourse. There's I've tried for years to get a lawsuit against them, but people say, oh, well, you see, they just say it's their opinion. And that's that. But right. Then when Amazon says, we're not going to deal with you because you're on the SPLC list.
Right.
And so many others in the same way.
Right.
Then it's much more powerful than just one group's opinion.
Right. But and if you follow the money, you're going to find that it's exactly the people that we're talking about that also fund Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the LGBTQ and the Women's March. So at this point, the people of the United States have been divided in so many ways that, you know, divide and conquer, united we stand, divided we fall. We are there. And I feel like the stakes are so high for America right now. And yet so many people are still looking at it like we're in some kind of election cycle. And I don't think that that's true. I think we're in some kind of manipulative mind control takeover where our sovereignty is seriously in danger, let alone our lives, because when the people finally have had enough, that then what? You know, this is what your book's about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really don't like to get into this, but I'm going to because you mentioned it. Elections at this point, I don't know how much hope we can hold out that there will be massive change because of an election. You look, for example, at the very recent election in Arizona, and that was theft in plain sight, that the voting machines suddenly don't work in the areas where Carrie Lake is going to get a lot of votes. And then she mounts an appeal and has all kinds of evidence of election fraud, and it's just summarily thrown out. And it seems to me that not only is it theft of an election, but it's on purpose theft of an election in plain sight. That they want to be able to see that this is going on, and that's designed to breed hopelessness, that there's nothing we can do. They have everything sewn up. Well, they don't have everything remotely sewn up. And there are all kinds of things that we can do short of some kind of a violent uprising. They would love a violent uprising, because then they could use it to crack down with more authoritarian measures. But we look at Elon Musk buying Twitter. Nobody expected that he would suddenly be striking out for the freedom of speech. Maybe something will happen with the House Republicans in Congress. There are all kinds of things that can break without there being some sort of illegal activity. And so I'm not saying that it's hopeless. They want us to think that it's hopeless. Right. But I am saying the elections at this point are so tainted, and there needs to be massive overhaul and serious election reform, going back to the days where there was one election day, and if you couldn't make it, you couldn't vote. Sorry, that's it. You vote at a polling place on that day, with a paper ballot, and that's all. And then there's no chicanery, or at least a vastly reduced possibility for chicanery. Failing that, then I can't say, oh, everything's going to turn around in 2024. Maybe people will vote in large numbers for the right people. After all, the Republicans got a big majority in the 2022 midterms, but it didn't translate to seats because the Democrats had already figured out that if you gerrymander the district so that the Republicans win huge in one district and then lose all the others, then you have taken away their possibility of gaining a lot of seats. And so they figured that out. Why the Republicans couldn't figure that out, I don't know. Maybe it was controlled opposition people on that side who let it all happen. But in any case, it has happened. And so 2024 is not going to bring relief. It could come, but it's not going to come from elections.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm glad you said that, because I went around the last 2 years. I've been in 22 states in the last 18 months, and I went and I spoke for people like Carrie Lake at their events and stuff. And what I learned is that the election issue goes before even the primary. Running for office in America, like, you know, we want to look at our founding fathers and think like, you know, anyone could run for office that has been like a good local businessman or a teacher, somebody that cares about their community, which is who should be running for office. But if you meet nice candidates, I live in New York City, so I went to events to help people in Brooklyn and in Long Island. Great people. Getting on even the primary ballot is so hard. And it costs so much. It's so much money, so much manipulating. And then what's crazy, it's not just the GOP or the DNC. It's both of them that apparently do not want any change to the status quo, probably because opening their books would be a big problem for a lot of people. But I have to tell you, I think that it's people, we get to the election day and they cheated. The whole system is rigged from before you even decide to run. So nobody that really would, I think, do the right thing even gets a shot. And if they get there, the two sides, the parties, are the ones that say, no, we're not going to have this happen. And I think that this, again, like you're talking about, this goes back to the people. It's we, the people, that need to start behaving yet again, like we are the government and the government works for us. Because right now, that is not what's happening.
Indeed. And you're absolutely right. To be even to be a candidate nowadays, for the most part, you have to just play the game, which means you'll go along with the uniparty, you'll go along with the establishment, with the status quo. One candidate in Florida that I'm sure you've heard of, Laura Loomer, ran twice now for Congress. Now, whatever you may think of her, she's not a Washington type. She's not an establishment type. Certainly shake things up in Congress. And she recently tweeted, she said, you know, Kevin McCarthy, they have good reason to be upset with him and not want him to be Speaker of the House. When I ran, he actively helped my opponents, even though my opponents were leftists and not going to be helpful to the ostensible Republican agenda at all.
Right.
But she's not the kind of person that they want in Congress. And so she doesn't have a chance. It's remarkable enough that she was even able to run as the Republican candidate twice.
Yeah.
But the establishment made sure that she didn't win. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many other people who are sincere patriots, who want to do good in Washington, who don't want to play along with the establishment. And they get deep sixed right from the beginning.
Yeah, you can't even get on the primary ballot. I have friends that were running in one in Long Island and one in Staten Island, and they got all the signatures and everything. And then they come to them, this election commission, which I believe is also a Soros-funded situation. There's a lot of them, secretaries of state, the DAs, like the oligarchy. But the both of them, two different districts, don't even know each other. They both had a thing where they were told that some of their signatures were not verifiable, like with not enough time to even turn it around. And I heard that happened all over the country. So this is a system that's rigged to not let anyone new in. So it is a miracle that Laura and a bunch of, I was down there with her too, that a bunch of other people actually even got as far as they did. And thank God they threw their hat in the ring to at least have a voice. But that is not really how it's set up to work. Again, we the people. So in the Sumter Gamut, you actually do have suggestions for the people. People always say to me, what can I do? And then when push comes to shove, there's a handful, which we don't need, you know, 100 million people, you know, to make a difference. But we do need a good chunk and at least on the same page. The truth about the other side, I don't even know what they are anymore, but they're run by this. I know who they're run by because it's very obvious if you trace their money. They're very organized. They're very loyal. And it's from the top down, and it's got a lot to do with money and ideology and mind control, in my opinion. But our side and true patriots really don't have a cohesive leadership, a message. There's lots of little groups, especially that started in the last few years, but they're kind of not all working in unison like the other side, which has been doing it for 20 years. Well, we've kind of piecemealed it. And now we're coming in from behind. And, you know, a big person that influenced me was Hannah Arendt. And she said that the reason that totalitarian regimes succeed is not because of the convinced Nazi or the committed communist, but because of the apathetic German. And that was her take on what happened in Germany. Well, I feel we're there. So we have a lot of apathetic people, and then we have a lot of people who say they want to take action, but when they start to think of what they can do, it's just too much. So what are your suggestions for the people out there that actually want to get involved?
This is the main thing. You really hit the nail on the head right here, because the problem is that we do have a majority, and that most people are not really on board with this agenda, but they're afraid. They're afraid of losing their jobs. They're afraid of being vilified. They're afraid of being isolated. And so the very first thing that we must do, and everybody must do, there must be no exceptions to this, is that we all have to become activists now. Right. This is not something somebody else is going to take care of for us. And once more people stand up, then the more cowardly will see, oh, well, look, people are standing up, and there's safety and strength in numbers. But we have to have the courage to stand up first and say, no, no more of this. And so every little thing that happens, instead of saying, look, they have a drag queen in the public library or in the third grade class, go and make a public problem about it.
Right.
Because this evil thrives in darkness. It thrives with people's indifference and people's not even knowing that it's going on. So every time we see this kind of thing happening, every little thing, no matter how small or insignificant it may seem to be, we have to make as public an outcry about it as possible. And the more that we do that, the more people will join. Yeah. And we'll see, oh, it's safe to stand up. It's just like in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Right.
The whole country is rising up because a few people did and said, when this poor 20-year-old girl, and she was killed by the authorities because she didn't have her headscarf on right. And a few people took to the streets and said, we're not going to take this anymore. And then other people thought, oh, they're out there. And they're not getting killed right away. We can go out there and do it ourselves. So that's the kind of grassroots, genuine grassroots momentum that we can and should and must build here.
Yeah.
But it starts with us. It starts with people who are willing to stand up and take the initial heat. But wow. They're much less formidable than they appear. They appear to be formidable because they control the government, they control the media, they control the entertainment industry, they control the education industry, they control everything.
Right.
But they don't control the people, they don't control the majority, and they know that, and they're very frightened.
I agree.
At this point, many people have woken up to the fact that this is not a republic with two parties and genuine free discourse and so on, but as you noted, an oligarchy that's tending toward authoritarianism, that is trying to criminalize the opposition. And the more people stand up, the weaker they get.
Yeah, I think that I wonder your thoughts. I think what happened on January 6th was these people knew what they did in 2020. They know what they've done for decades. Honestly, the real problem, one of the biggest problems, I think, is that we've gone, if you go all the way back, I mean, Tucker brought it up, not me, JFK, forward, you know, through the Clintons, through 9/11, through the COVID, through all of this stuff. There has been very little accountability, very little justice, very little transparency. Very little. The government never seems to be held accountable. Nobody goes to jail for true crimes. We're talking about also a lot of the things you write about, which are international crimes that are massive, that our country has committed with our money in our name that we were lied to about. And my question to you is that accountability, that all this stuff they hide for reasons of national security, which then you find out years later was just covering up something else. We have such a massive amount of criminality going on in DC alone. And yet, and I think that people are at a point where they like, They don't see justice anywhere happening. Yet there's so much crime, and I think it's trickling down. So I would venture to say that January 6th was pretty much a situation where they were like, you can't retreat. You can't come here with your grievances to D.C. That doesn't happen here. We're going to throw all these people in the gulag, these not real criminals. And now we're at a place where it does appear that the criminals are running the asylum, and the people are scared of the criminals, rightly so. But at what point do we turn around and we actually go and say, it's you? It's not us. And on massive scale, it's amazing that they mobilized Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And I don't even know what the Women's March was about, but that good Americans aren't down there accounting, you know, saying you got to be held accountable first.
Absolutely. And you're right. You know, D.C. is a fortress now. I was there in October, and actually quite near the Capitol, but you can't get all that near the Capitol. All these barricades and barriers everywhere, and police with big guns. You know, I actually grew up in Washington. I was a kid, I would walk around Washington and wander into the Capitol absolutely freely,
right,
and go into public buildings. My father worked in the department in the Voice of America that was in the Department of and Welfare building on 4th and Independence at 4th Street and Independence Avenue in Washington. And I used to go into work with him. This is like 1972 or three. And then I would go wander around in Washington. It was a very different time, like 10 years old and just wandering around alone.
You know, that's what we envision when it's was functioning, or at least appeared to be.
Yeah. It was a reasonably functioning republic at the time. And so I would come and go as I pleased during the day. And the reason why I'm telling you this story is because I was back in Washington and I decided to take a trip down memory lane. And I went to the Voice of America offices at 4th and Independence. And there are all these guards and barricades and checkpoints and everything. And I said, you know, I spent a lot of time here when I was a kid. My father worked here. Can I go in and just look around and go down the hallway and look? And they said, you have a pass? You have a permit? You have to get written permission, you know? And it's like a police state. Now, all this is coming from the left's paranoia about the fact that they know that they don't have a majority. They know that despite all their bluster, the people are not on board with them. And so they have a kind of siege mentality, but also it's designed, as you noted, to give the impression that the right wing are dangerous insurrectionists, right, traitors, and violent Yahoo rednecks from the sticks who are going to come with guns and pitchforks and destroy the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. There is no government of the people, by the people, and for the people in Washington at this point.
No, but again, that's our fault, in my opinion. I mean, I'm at a place where the only people who are going to save us is us. And again, we are the government is supposed to be by the people, for the people. They're supposed to actually work for us. So you're bringing up what's going on in D.C. I was down there not that long ago with all the gates and the fencing and the guns and you're sitting there thinking, what country are we in? What is going on here? Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know? And you've been for decades working on stuff with jihadi and the Middle East and Afghanistan. I want to ask you about Afghanistan in a second. But, you know, this is not America. This is not what should be going on here. And the people in D.C. know it. And not just because the thing that scares me is a lot of people don't know about the think tanks and the military industrial complex and how much power the lobbyists and the lawyers there have. But I don't understand where these people's, I don't know how they live with themselves, seeing what you saw, what I saw in D.C. and looking around and thinking, this is okay. As long as we keep power, this is okay. I don't know what to do, but I think that should be enough for most people to say it's not okay.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, you talk about the military industrial complex. That's a very big part of this. We stayed 20 years in Afghanistan on a total fool's errand and left in a worse position than we were when we went in, because these people were profiting massively from the sale of armaments and from the entire military operation there. But the whole thing was wrongly conceived, wrongly executed, wrongly ended. And it was because of the profit motive, because there were clearly people who were benefiting from our presence there. And so it kept going on and on and on and on. When it ended, the same people who were profiting had to find a new profit source. And suddenly there's Ukraine war that we that everybody has to support. And what our interests are in Ukraine are not at all clear. If people act as if Ukraine is a member of NATO. We have a mutual defense agreement with all the countries in NATO, but Ukraine is not in NATO. Right. And the whole idea of that is that we know by making agreements like the NATO agreement, which countries we need to defend and which we do not. And so anybody who thinks about this for 5 minutes should realize, well, we actually have no obligation to Ukraine, except there's a lot of weirdness about Ukraine, you know, with Trump impeached over Ukraine, with his phone call with Zelensky, with the Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX and the allegations that the American government was sending money over to the Ukrainian government. The Ukrainian government then sends money to FTX and FTX sends money to Democrat politicians. Well, I thought all that explains it. Right. That's why suddenly they're wearing the blue and gold on their and saying we have to.
Also, you've written a lot about color revolutions and what's happened around the world. And a lot of American people have no idea what's happened. They don't know about the National Endowment for Democracy and the CIA and going into foreign nations. A lot of people don't know any of this has ever happened. And it's been going on for decades because of the profit and the, in my opinion, and the power. But, you know, that revolution. Go ahead. What?
If it happens there, it can happen here.
It
if they will go
here.
In and make it look like a popular revolution and transform the government in another country, you think they're going to stop from some kind of a coup here? And remember, there were two presidents who warned about the military-industrial complex. One, the first was Eisenhower, and he was retiring when he did it. And the second was Trump. And then what happened?
Right. You know? No doubt.
November 22nd, 1963. The exact month after Kennedy was assassinated, Harry Truman, who founded the CIA while he was president, wrote an article saying the CIA is out of hand. They're out of control. They have exceeded their stated mission. They got to be shut down. And I wonder what a coincidence that he wrote that exactly to the day 1 month after Kennedy was killed. Could there be a connection? And
be, of course, you know?
And the CIA is still with us. But if they could do that, and RFK Jr. just said it the other day that the CIA killed his uncle. If they could do that, would they hesitate to frame a president and destroy him with bogus charges like happened with Trump?
Yeah.
Obviously, I think this is somebody who was against the establishment, and so they removed him.
Yeah, and he started to do things to dismantle this international overhaul, too, with the WHO and the fraudulent Paris Climate Accords. And he was looking at NATO, which should have been dismantled anyway. Now, you've studied a lot of this. I've had a lot of vets come to me, and I go to events, and I talk to a lot of vets that look back on everything from 2000 on and why they went and a lot enlisted after 9/11. And a lot of people talk about that document by Cheney and Rumsfeld about, I think it was about redoing the armed forces of America. It was like the Center for the New American Century, these guys. And in this document, they basically lay out that the United States, without the people wanting this or really knowing it's happening, they laid out a whole plan to basically be the empire of the world, take over every nation, do all this stuff, land, air, sea, they want to control everything. I mean, it's in a document that Cheney, I believe, put out there. And from that point on, we've been at war nonstop. Yeah. And a lot of these guys are starting to look at it. I remember Wesley Clark came out years later and he said after 9/11, Rumsfeld gave him a list of places that they were going to go into. And he said, first was Iraq. And Wesley Clark's like, why are we going into Iraq? And he's like, and he's going through all these things. We have a lot of people out there that are looking at from that document forward. and thinking, what have we done? And the American people should start really, I think, looking inside, looking at these facts, because I think that's where we went really off the rails.
I couldn't agree more. And it's a massive mess. It's a massive scandal that hasn't come out, really, that people don't realize. In the first place, after 9/11, we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, neither of which were right. responsible for what happened on 9/11. The guys trained in Afghanistan, that's true, but they were aided to get in and out of there by the Islamic Republic of Iran and Saudi Arabia. And we didn't go into Saudi Arabia or the Islamic Republic of Iran. Saudi Arabia is supposedly our ally, and the Islamic Republic of Iran is too much trouble. You know, it's a lot easier to go into Afghanistan and Iraq. And so we invaded the wrong places on false pretenses.
Right.
If we had really wanted to deal with the people who were responsible for 9/11, we would have invaded Saudi Arabia and Iran. I am not advocating that either.
Right.
I don't think that necessarily that would have been the proper response. But certainly the idea that we needed to go into Afghanistan for 20 years to try to build a Western style secular republic in a place that was never going to take one was ridiculous and baseless. And Iraq, the same thing. All we did was create, by removing Saddam Hussein, a satellite state of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which wants to destroy us. I mean, this is a government that Joe Biden could not, he would love to accommodate and appease. And they keep chanting death to America. When Obama concluded the first nuclear deal, they were chanting death to America.
Right.
They mean they would love to do that. And all we did was give them a client state.
Yeah.
In Iraq. And now Iraq has actually called for the arrest. They have issued a warrant for the arrest of Donald Trump because of the killing of Qasem Soleimani. And yeah. I saw that and I thought, well, you know, Merrick Garland and Joe Biden, I wouldn't put it past them to deliver
Me
up
either.
Trump to Baghdad for
yeah,
the for,
especially to, since especially since the whole Obama team is really is back in there. We got Rice, we got Powers running U.S. aid. We got, the whole Blinken and the whole West exec crew. I mean, it's really, really just the American people, though, are the ones that need to really start looking inside and realizing that the rest of the world, you know, I did a show. I got kicked off of YouTube a long time ago. I was having on too many truth tellers. But I did a show on Libya. I think Libya was the worst of the war crimes of them all in the Middle East, because first of all, his people loved him from what I could see. A, he wanted out of the petrodollar and was actually going to try to do something in Africa for the African people. And right before that, he had spoken at the UN and everyone was saying he sounded crazy, but he was really talking about, you know, what was going on. So then I see Samantha Power, who's now running the money bags for USAID, was really the it orchestrated a lot of this stuff and the revolution in Yugoslavia and Ukraine. And that's where I think we are here. But I do think the American people need a real, a real moment of looking at what's being done in our name, what's being done around the world in our name, why we have bases all over this planet, why we have bioweapons. This is not representative of us, we the people. And I think the people should be able to at least unite over that.
Yes, I couldn't agree more here again. And you're right. People would be appalled
yeah.
if they knew where we have military. We have military in Somalia. We have military in Mozambique. There is just no reason. There's no justification. There's no American interest. And people say, well, you of all people should know why it's important, because there are jihadis there. Sure, there are jihadis all over the world.
Right.
And actually, the United States government doesn't even admit that there are jihadis all over the world or that there's a jihad, because it says Islam is a religion of peace, which makes it all the more curious as to why they have decided that they need to fight these people in Somalia and Mozambique. We have these troops there, but not enough to actually make a huge difference. Just enough, apparently, to line somebody's pockets.
Exactly. And take the resources, I would think. We have these developing nations all over the world. This is why I think the UN is such a farce and should be destroyed. But we have all these nations all over the world, and all they keep at, and with the climate thing, with this and that, they're asking for all of our money, like $100 billion to Ukraine, which we know is not going to anyone in Ukraine. I saw BlackRock's going to be rebuilding Ukraine, so that makes a lot more sense. But I got to tell you, We are at a place where we, the people, must be honest and fight through, like you said, and stand up and tell the truth. You've been telling the truth for a very long time. And a lot, everything that you say is provable. You know, you have Lindsey Graham up there. McCain's not here anymore. But I mean, if you looked a little bit, you'd see like them arming ISIS or you know, being involved in other things. There's pictures. And yet you wonder. So let me ask you right now, because you know a lot about this. Is that happening at our border? Are jihadis coming through our southern border? What is going on down there?
No doubt about it. Absolutely. There were 98 people on the terror watch list apprehended at the border in the last year. That's up from about 15 the year before. Clearly, they see that Biden has essentially erased the border, and so they're streaming in. And of course, the 98 who were caught doesn't reflect the number that got in without right. being caught. And so there's any number of jihadis who are in the United States right now because they crossed over the southern border. This is something obviously the administration doesn't care about one bit. You got to wonder, you know, if Joe Biden were a traitor in the pay of a foreign power, or if he wanted, for whatever reason, for the globalist, socialist, internationalist oligarchy or whatever, he wanted to destroy the United States. If he were an actual subversive agent wanting to destroy the United States, what would he be doing differently from what he's doing now? And I think he would be doing exactly the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And one of the things, erasing the southern border and letting all these terrorists and criminals and everything else come in.
Yeah, I mean, it's as if, but you know what? All of us, you, all your books are totally factual, and I follow a lot of other people that do similar work. You know, it's like we're in some kind of denial. It's like we're in a bad relationship with our government and with our history. We're, you know, we're like the abused person stays and is like, you know, they'll change. No, they're not going to change. We have to change. And that's where, you know, we have to really look. This is why I think your book is so important, because we need solutions. We need some guts. Look at you. I mean, I see like the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they attack you. These people are very dangerous. You know, and you stand up. We need more people to just start being honest with themselves and realizing our children and our grandchildren will be living in a totalitarian, you know, controlled by we don't even know who, you know.
Indeed. There's no doubt about it. And you're absolutely right. Actually, the whole Islamophobia thing and the hate group listings of the Southern Poverty Law Center and all that, that have caused a great deal of trouble for me and other people over the last 10, 15 years. That was kind of a dry run. That was the first example of cancel culture and of the practice of, actually, it's something Saul Alinsky wrote about, that you isolate an enemy and you freeze it out, destroy it. And this is exactly what happened. The 9/11 happened, and a few of us started to call attention to the ideological roots of jihad violence. And then the left said, this is Islamophobia, and these are the real problem. The problem is not jihad violence. The problem is these Islamophobes. And instead of standing up, the conservative establishment fell into line and said, oh, yes, sir, we won't have anything to do with these Islamophobes. And that was really the big failing, or though perhaps the first revelation of the Uniparty. Right. And now that was done successfully and we were all demonized and marginalized, now that technique is being used on a much larger scale. And now people are waking up. Saying,
yeah, you know,
no,
it's funny. I feel that same way, though, about the ADL. I think the ADL is such a fat fraud. I mean, if my grandmother was alive right now and saw what the ADL became, she used to give money to them. She would be horrified. And the other way that they use it too, God forbid you say anything bad about Soros or Bloomberg, you're anti-Semitic. They call me that. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So it's like, they'll use anything. What?
Soros helped the Nazis when he was a kid in World War II. and it's anti-Semitic to criticize.
Yeah, but they use it every time. That's if you look at the ADL, has the ADL is somehow raised to the level of, first of all, they were aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood when Obama was in there, and A and B, they also are influencing media and big tech. I think they have a partnership with PayPal, ADL. This guy, the guy running it. It's such a farce to use all this stuff. And again, it's just to divide and conquer, and it's all a fraud. But you know, again, I, like you said, I think we are the majority. I think there's more of us than them. But I think your work, especially, but a lot of, you know, people that have the guts to tell the truth and take the, you know, remove the veil and say, look, this is our government. This is what they've done. We have paid for it. Because again, here we go. This omnibus bill goes through. You look at it, you think, where is America in their priorities? Yeah. It's completely shocking to me. But we need to do something about it because the people are the only answer. Like you brought up General Flynn before. I was once talking. We were at an event together, and he looked at me, and we were talking about how the other side doesn't care that we know that they don't care.
That's right.
It's like some kind
because of. Demoralizing effect. They want us to lose hope. And so a lot of this is being done in plain sight. You know, Joe Biden is clearly not a functioning human being, but he's trotted out there, I think, in part because it kind of rubs it in.
Right.
That we can put a drooling idiot into the Oval Office and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And it's the same thing with Fetterman, the senator from Pennsylvania. You know, we can take a brain damaged individual and put him out there and make him a senator, and you can't do a thing.
Right.
But
where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? You've been looking at this for decades. Next.
Like
step.
I said, we have to keep being ungovernable, keep being a nuisance, keep on speaking out, begin to speak out if you're not, and make it clear that, excuse me, that we're not going to take this anymore. Like the old movie from the 70s, you know?
Exactly, Network.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's true. It's true. And I hope anyone watching out there understands that this man right here has been out there fighting. And these people, like Pamela Geller, there's other people that do what you do. And it's like, you're such targets, but you keep going. And it should be a sign to everyone that telling the truth has its own power. And people have to start having the guts to tell the truth, to stand up. Because honestly, at this point, you know, Robert, I have to say, people have to understand the stakes for our country are so high right now with this militarized, I don't know, uniparty, oligarchy, billionaire, trillionaire, you know, with the FBI and all these agencies that are unconstitutional to begin with. But the way that they're behaving, it really is that if we don't stand up now, there's not going to be the ability to do what Jefferson said and address our grievances and turn this around. The gulag in January 6th, if we don't stand up now, will become reality for many more of us, including probably both of us. So we really got to stand up. So what should people out there do? Where should they go? How should they start? What should they be looking at, getting involved?
There's no one answer to that. That depends on everybody's circumstances. But everybody should remember, now is the time I have to stand up and act. Like Tom Paine said, these are the times try men's souls. Now your soul is being tried. Are you going to be a coward and sit back, or are you going to stand up? You can stand up in myriad ways. You can go to a school board meeting and protest and get on the FBI list as a terrorist. And you say, well, I can't do that. I have car payments or whatever. Nope. This is the time to stand up.
None of that's going
to
matter.
That's right. And in any small way, the more you stand up, the weaker they will become.
Right. Well, and a good way you can do that and learn about this and figure this all out is to follow Robert Spencer. He is all over the place. He's a prolific writer. He's got a great book out right now. He has another book. Is the book about Afghanistan out also or not yet?
It is. Yep. Nope. It was out in the fall.
Because the Afghanistan book is really important. People have to understand what was done in our name and what was left behind, and that they jumped right to Ukraine. The same moneymakers, the same people, beneficiaries, which were never the people. And I really, your work is so amazing. He's written 26 books, so there's plenty to choose from. So can you tell my audience where they can find you, how they can get the Sumpter Gambit, which is very important? I would buy that book for not just yourself, but for other people out there that you think they, because a lot of people right now, Robert, are asking, people that are uninvolved, people that are left, right, libertarian, independent, whatever, are kind of looking around being like, something's really wrong. So a book like yours could do a big, make a big difference for somebody that's just starting to question what's going on.
That's what the book's all about. Yes. Trying to tie it all together, show people what's really happening. The Sumpter Gambit, it'll be available on Amazon on the 17th. Right now, it is the 12th as we are discussing this today. And so if you see this between the 12th and the 17th, go to conservativereaders.com.
Great.
Conservativereaders.com. You can get the Sumpter Gambit there. And like I say, it'll be on Amazon soon. I am at jihadwatch.org. I got lots of other books, The History of Jihad, The Critical Quran. You can get the links all at jihadwatch.org, where you can find news about jihad and the totalitarian left every day.
Yeah, and you're right. You're all over the all the best truth-telling websites carry your work. So thank you so much, sir. It's been a real honor. And keep up the amazing work. And everyone, go out there and buy that book and give it to a friend. People need to all understand what is going on. Once you